midcourt heave. No good. Out of bounds. Duquesne can do. 71-67. Their first NCAA tournament win since 1969. As they knock off BYU 71-67.
That's some good passing. Gets the ball inside for a two-fisted jam for Kalkbrenner. It was Shireman to Farabello all the way around the arc.
You're listening to Cofield and Company.
Higher seed of Creighton, no problem today. Pulled away in the second half, really took care of business. You hear that from Westwood One and Duquesne. Not a regular in the NCAA tournament.
No, what, 55 years since the last win?
And Keith Donbrot out, right? Retiring, not fired, out.
Yeah.
Long basketball lineage. He got a win. That was pretty cool. And the way Duquesne got it was, I don't know if it's surprising, but as you pointed out earlier, BYU just simply got torn away from the way they play.
Yeah, they weren't making threes early because they were just getting shoved off the line. So they started to try to go to the basket, which is not what they do. And then I thought, okay, now that you're trying to go to the rim, now you can kick out. But they just weren't. Then they just started shooting twos. And once they did start shooting threes again, they couldn't make them, and it just kind of spiraled from there. So not a great performance.
Updates on what's going on right now. Is that your guy in Oakland?
Yeah, I think it's his fifth or sixth of the first half from three. So the silly graphic of 121 made threes a game, which I thought was crazy, it might be true.
He's going to get there.
I mean, I thought I would have heard about it before, that he was making that many.
We jinxed it. He was shooting a three, by the way. 28-25 off a turnover. 4 minutes left. Oakland on top of Kentucky. Colorado State got off to a decent start, but still down 14. They were down 16 at the half, 29-15. 17 minutes left in the game. CSU is trailing Texas, and very early in Gonzaga and McNeese. Zags up by 6, 18-12. Have you been checking out, speaking of all this college basketball, have you been checking out the coaching carousel, the coaching front? Your friends over at Coaching Changes were talking about the Michigan job, and three names listed: Dusty May from Florida Atlantic, Jamie Dixon, and Jerome Tang. Do you think those two are serious about having interest or serious about getting raises?
Both. Probably both. And we'll see what happens with – I do believe Dusty May is the number one target. He's also the number one target at Louisville, and they're going to throw a lot of money at him. We heard what the Scott Drew offer was. If it's the same offer, it's going to be tough for Michigan to match. But I don't think
he's
going to get the
about?
Same.
What kind of money?
It sounded about maybe – the original was $9 a year, but it sounds like it maybe went up to $11.
$11 million a year at Louisville.
And a massive NIL budget.
I did see that. Rumors of a name, image, likeness budget upwards of $4 million a year for a team.
Yeah, I thought it was $5 million.
Really?
But yeah.
$5 million?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's that. The a lot of the big money people at Louisville said enough is enough. Time to get back to where they were, and we'll see if they're, you know, if Dusty May does accept that, or if that is really what's offered and how it's gonna play out. But there's definitely a lot of moving pieces to come in the coaching world. It's, you know, one of the best parts about, you know, the tournament time. As soon as teams are out, you start talking about that, and then especially as it gets close to the Final Four, most of the hires are kind of done, but guys are putting staffs together, that sort of thing. So next couple weeks are crazy, not only with games, but off the court as well in college basketball.
And you want Dusty May to be the Wolverines head coach?
Of the choices, yeah. I mean, I think that's the way to go.
Is there someone not named that you'd like?
Well, my thought for the last couple of years has been kind of the same, as you know, anybody but Juwan. So anything's an improvement.
UNLV season is still alive. You missed the game last night right here on ESPN Las Vegas. First half, a little trouble defending the three ball. Second half, the power takes over. I will say the press break at the end got a little bit shaky, but they made enough free throws to escape. And Princeton's shot-making ability down the stretch was just sick as they stayed alive. But you and DeMond were pointing out in this 84-77 victory that the Rebels made Princeton work on defense, and Princeton didn't seem to have enough zip throughout the game to want to bust ass to defend.
Yeah, it wasn't. That's an effort. Defense is an effort thing, and there was not much effort, I thought, from the other side. And again, that's, it's not a critique on UNLV. It's just they were the team that wanted it more. They wanted to be there. They cared, and Princeton didn't seem to, and UNLV took advantage of that.
Rob Whaley, 21, 8 of 8 from the floor.
He cared.
Well, I'm glad he had a big game. I'm glad he got his confidence back. Because I think between the injury and just, you know, playing a lot of rough games and, you know, having to play a game against Jadon Ladie is freaking taxing mentally. I mean, you would hope the goal is go 100% at Ladie and get him off the floor, but I don't think Rob had the lift. I think he was thinking about the ankle. I think he's been thinking about it a lot. But this one, he looked good. He had 21 points, and then Keelan Boone has been a hero for him, 18 and 11. And, again, both of us thought, hey, it's going to be a tough spot, cross-country. The actual Princeton offense, it's going to be rough. And then if you had thrown in, DJ Thomas had a game, but he didn't have a big scoring game, that he would, his output would be 5 points. You're like, okay, they got, without Lou Rod, without Caleb Boone, come on. They got it done.
I mean, I thought DJ maybe had his worst game of the year. Five turnovers, too. And, you know, just, and those things happen. He's a freshman, and end of the year, there's a lot of fatigue, I think, as well, playing in. He's played a ton of minutes. So for them to overcome that is really, really impressive. And not to mention, you would expect that's not going to happen again. So the team's only going to get more dangerous as the tournament goes on, because now they're developing, hey, we, you know, they're seeing, you know, it's not just about him having big games. Like, there's a lot of other guys that can step up too.
I'm not saying you're getting that Shane Noel every game, but that was massive to get that Shane Noel.
Oh,
he hasn't played.
No, yeah, no question.
And then he goes to the line. Guy shot like 4 free throws the entire season, and they're like, okay, you got to make these, otherwise this could be in jeopardy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I think all around it was a lot of guys stepping up, and they had to. Like, they're two guys that play a ton of minutes and are very important to the team were not there, and then your point guard wasn't at his best, so you had to have a bunch of guys step up, and certainly Rob Whaley did, certainly Keelan Boone did, and they're guys that, you know, contribute regularly, but also guys that don't have a lot. By the way, not to mention, it's happened a couple times, but there was like a 2-minute stretch in the first half of Carl Jones. Back-to-back baskets, a nice defensive play as well. So it was everybody.
Sunday game now against Boston College, 6:30 tip. That's on the heels of a Saturday game with the Lady Rebels. If I'm correct on that one, that's a 3 o'clock tip. Are you in L.A.? For sure?
No, I'll be at Thomas Mack.
Oh, look at you. You're back on the men's beat.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to be on the women's beat.
Well, not anymore.
The victory changed it. Okay. All right.
No, we got to. It's the road to Indianapolis, Steve. I'm on the road to Indianapolis.
You know, you look at him. Now he's all over the Rebels beat.
Real quick, we got a text from Fuzz. Thank you for texting in. He said, man, Adam always got to pop the balloon, doesn't he? He's rooting for him, Fuzz. Don't you worry.
Of course.
We're just nobody saying wants, that Princeton's mind was elsewhere yesterday.
Nobody wants UNLV to be in the semifinals of the NIT more than me. I can assure you of that. There is no place I'd like a quick little trip to more than Indianapolis. I love that place. And I talk about that all the time here on the show. Well, I mean, but also what, and I prefaced it a couple times, but what do people want? You know what? Princeton gave their all and UNLV overcame it. That's how it happened. Is that, I mean, is that how we want to do it?
I love that voice of you. With
everything?
Show like that.
Yeah, I'll just do it all the time. Hey, you know what? Good job on UNLV, and I did say good job for UNLV, but let's be honest about the situation. I've seen Princeton play many times this year. Not their biggest effort. And not, as you mentioned earlier, not the, oh boy, that's 7. Not the biggest effort from the crowd either. I think you pointed that out earlier, DeMond. So, yeah, like, let's be honest about the situation, to give UNLV all the credit in the world for doing what they did and for being motivated. Like, there's something to be said about a team that actually gets up for that. Good on them.
They've played really well on the road. I'm not going to suggest that following the game yesterday that they go straight to Boston and they'd be better off. I see an energy on social media for the game against Boston College. Are people going to go? It's a 6:30 start on Sunday night.
Some. Some will. I also think there's, you know, depends what we see with the NCAA schedule in terms of who's playing at that same time. And also, I think, weirdly enough, do the Lady Rebels win on Saturday and kind of get the, you know, school pride going? I think that matters.
Okay. That could help.
Yeah.
Did you look ahead in the bracket for the NIT for UNLV?
I only looked to the semifinals.
Next matchup will be the winner, if they can advance, will be the winner of North Texas and Seton Hall. Where's that game?
Seton Hall's ranked, right? I mean, they're not ranked. They're seated.
Seated.
So it'd be in New Jersey.
Oh, God. All the way back to the Garden State.
Big for you.
I have no idea. I'm just speaking out of turn here. They didn't play at whatever the hell they call it. They still call it the Rock in Newark.
The other night.
They played at Walsh Gymnasium, which is like their old school. You know,
nice.
Whatever year they built that dump.
Nice. I like that.
That'd be interesting.
And by the way, for those who don't know, we've been talking about Indianapolis. It'd be at Hinkle Fieldhouse, which is, you know, historic.
Oh, but the tournament has been totally ruined.
Yeah. It's not at Madison Square Garden.
It's not at Madison Square Garden. No, it's, who even cares? That was good.
I'd rather have a trip to Indianapolis than New York.
Have you been to MSG for a basketball game?
Oh, yeah.
I've been there for many.
Been there for hockey, MMA.
Okay.
It's fine. It's right? Convenient.
Yeah.
Take the train.
It's That's
nice.
Why it's convenient. What are you doing, Damon?
Well, that was the Adam dropping his bona fides. Okay. Oh, I've been there for it all.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen a lot of events there.
Did the UFC events?
Conor McGregor and Michael Chan? No, Conor McGregor, Eddie Alvarez was there.
Okay. Well, that could be special.
Yeah, it was cool.
I'm not going to go on a rant, an anti-MSG rant.
It's fine.
It's cool going once.
Sure.
Can we extend the praise for this guy from Oakland?
What, 7 threes?
Man.
He's below his average. He averages 121 per game.
I'm like a tad second behind on my TV than you guys are there. So every time you say something, I look over a little bit. When he made that last three falling down, he's looking for his and one. He's right. He got fouled.
He did want an and one on that, too.
Hey, so you mentioned MSG and UFC. What exactly happened here with this lawsuit? When's the lawsuit from? What was the? It was an antitrust lawsuit, and
yeah,
supposedly fighters will be getting installments. The total settlement was for $335 million.
Yeah, there's a ton of fighters that are involved. They were looking for close to $2 billion, and it's been going on for close to a decade. I would consider this a massive victory for the UFC. I also think it is somewhat disappointing for if people wanted like drastic change in the sport. I think that's what a lot of people were looking for in terms of the UFC not only having to pay a settlement, but also to be penalized and potentially, you know, multitudes of damages in terms of how fighters have been treated, how contracts have been handled. And I think a lot of people were looking for big change for the future. I mean, it would have been a damaging blow to the UFC as a company if this lawsuit went through. And it sounded like a lot of people believed that the fighters were going to win. But they, you know, after, like I said, close to a decade, have decided to take the settlement. And I think the UFC is more than happy to pay the $360 million and just wash their hands of all of this.
What was being argued?
A lot of the way that the contracts were written and was eliminating competition, champions clauses for one thing that they were fighting against of you can't become a free agent once you're a champion, essentially. There was a lot of just a lot of the eliminating of opposition. So like buying out other companies so that you don't have other places to go to sign contracts. So you're eliminating, you're creating a monopoly. There was a lot of those just different things in the way that fighters managers were basically working for the UFC in some cases, which was totally unfair to fighters. There's a lot of things that were unfair to fighters along the way, and it sounded like the fighters were going to win this, but it also sounded like it was going to be dragged out years and years additionally, and some of them just said, just give us our money.
Damon?
Yeah, what Adam said is 100% right, but for me, when it comes to the fighters, I know that they want the money now. I did the math. I think it would probably be around $200,000 for the 1,200 fighters that were there. And I know it sounds like a lot of money. I would take it too.
It's not, because lawyers are getting most of it.
Exactly. Lawyers are getting most of it. Let's say if you cut off 40% for the lawyers of each person's individual cut, you're not getting that much money. I don't know why you don't take the fight all the way to the UFC, because they do have a monopoly over the fight game. And when it comes to TKO, the parent holding company, a special interest that I have in it is wrestling, because we know how much of the revenue that UFC fighters get. Well, wrestlers get even less of that than when it comes to WWE's earning and their revenue. So I would like to see this be a reckoning for wrestlers as well, to get them paid a little bit more. At the end of the day, even though I think that the fighters settled for way less money than they could have gotten, if it enacts some change with the UFC and fighter pay, would be a good thing. But with the settlement, I don't think it's going to push UFC's foot to the fire when it comes to paying their fighters more. This is just, hey, we got out of Dodge here.
Will it actually push them the other way?
Probably. Yeah. It empowers.
Oh, you want to do that?
Okay. It empowers them, for sure.
So they're not going to be forced to change?
No. No. And that's what I think a lot of people were hoping for, obviously, if this would have been pushed all the way to the end.
So, you know, we like to push back on the UFC and management there. We especially like to push back on the sport we don't even have here. We have an affiliate of Major League Baseball, but especially like to get after Rob Manfred.
Uh-oh. Colorado State within eight.
And this Shohei Ohtani theft thing.
Yeah.
I really believe baseball is behind the scenes for the last day or so is like, we can make it quiet. I don't think this is going to be quiet.
I don't think it's baseball. This is Ohtani's team.
So baseball's got an issue here.
So essentially it sounds like where this came about was it was kind of brought to Ohtani and his people, and they were ready to work with ESPN and their reporting and say, look, here's what happened. His friend was in trouble, and Shohei decided to pay the debt for his friend. And it sounds like that was ready to come out, and then there was a mass panic of, oh, this looks really bad. Even if it's not. Even if that is absolutely what happened and Shohei Ohtani has no responsibility to this, no culpability to it, he was just helping out a friend. People said, it looks bad. If your friend, your employee, who's your translator and your close friend, has this big gambling debt and you paid it for him, what is going on? That's a problem. And so all of a sudden, Shohei's team comes and says, you know what? That's not what happened. He's willing to do an interview that says it's all on him and he stole the money. And then people were like, wait, if he stole it, is he going to be prosecuted? So now it sounds like today Shohei's people have said, hey, can the federal investigators go after this guy? Because now they have to make it look like it's theft. Now, again, this is just reporting that's trickling out. We don't know any of this to be the case. We don't know how much true any of this is. What we know is this is how the reporting has been playing out the last couple of days, and it doesn't look great. Again, my belief, if you just read it and try to determine who's most likely telling the truth, it sounds like that was true. That his employee, his friend, his translator had a real problem, was in a lot of debt, and Shohei was trying to be nice and paid it off. And that for some reason, not for some reason, we know why, but when that story was going to surface, everybody panicked and said, this looks really bad for us. And told him he can't tell the truth. That's just what it seems like. Again, I'm not saying that's what happened. I just think if you read all sides, that's the most logical explanation. Or there was some nefarious activities by Ohtani, which is certainly possible as well. But we'll probably find out, because it does sound like investigators are being more active now in terms of how this money went to be paid off, how the gambling debt was accrued, and why he decided to pay it off for him.
Who does go after this from a journalistic standpoint?
Well, ESPN's been all over it, for sure.
Yeah, so they're in.
But there also is a language barrier, right, where you can try to talk to – you want to talk to Ohtani about what happened? Well, you got to go through his translator. It's kind of rough. Is he going to tell you what is actually being said? I don't know.
So right now you think baseball is okay?
I think so. I mean, I don't know what baseball would be unless there was something. I mean, look, there's been a big deal made about why or about how Ohtani got his payment structured. What if that was, hey, I got a bit of a gambling problem. Don't give me this money. Again, that's wild speculation that people are throwing out on social media.
Like, is this a fall guy?
But no. I mean, it doesn't seem like that's the case. But it also could just be this guy taking a fall for him. Like, who knows? There is a lot of layers to this. But even in the end, I don't know that baseball would have an issue. It would be more that Ohtani would have an issue. But for right now, he's okay.
For now. This is going to develop pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of layers to this, for sure.
And get ready. Get ready, because if there is some Ohtani involvement, I mean, frankly, the fact that is, if it is the interpreter who had the problem, the fact that they're moving a team into the gambling cradle of the country, you know, that's going to be brought up, although you can gamble everywhere now.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's
not California.
That's actually good that they'd be going to where it's legalized and not where you have to do it illegally.
Is that the way it's perceived, though? That's the problem.
No.
Come on.
I was going to say, if I'm Ipe, I'm pulling a Nino Brown. This is bigger than Ipe Mizuharu. It goes straight to the top with Shohei Ohtani. I would not take the fall for this. I know that he's a good friend, and he's trying to be the good guy here, and sounds like Shohei was covering his gambling debt. But it looks fishy, as Adam said. It looks fishy all the way around. MLB at least needs to put out a statement. They need to conduct their investigation, what they can figure out in the next week or two, and put out an investigation and put out a statement at least. Adam, did Shohei get a hit today?
Yeah.
Oh, he did?
And he actually hit it. I mean, he hit two.
Yeah, he almost hit two home
right
runs
to the warning track.
But maybe he didn't put a little extra on him because his mind's scrambling. He's thinking. He knows that the walls are closing in on him.
They came up short. Two shots came up short because he was thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's actually
there goes a home run power.
Well, actually, I mean, it was very impressive because he hit one to the warning track that might have been a home run in several stadiums, and he didn't even use his legs. Like, it was all arm. And even the commentators were like, how do you hit the ball that far with your legs just planted firmly and no stride? Wild.
Gonzaga, 30-18 right now against McNeese, about 8 minutes left in the first half. Kentucky is down at the half. Seven threes by Oakland, and they're up 38-35, and CSU did get it down to 8. It's now 12, 10 minutes left. Colorado State's trailing Texas 7 seed against a 10 seed. Joel Scott writhing in pain on the ground right now.
39-27.
It's crazy, man. Mountain West basketball at its best. It really isn't, and CSU's really not one of those grinder teams.
Oh! That was an elbow right to the jaw.
Oh, man. And then he went down in a heap, and his head might have hit the freaking ground.
That was rough.
That ain't good. All right, we'll come back. Got to get into the Raiders. Got to get into the latest. I don't know. I saw a chart of like 35 different mock drafts, and they seem to be going in the same directions. And it's not a lot of quarterbacks being selected with that first-round pick.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Colorado State starting to pick it up a little bit. Making some threes in the second half. Now it's a 7-point game. Mountain West against Big 12. And CSU was getting blasted at the half, 27-11. But right now, 39-32. We'll have to look that up. You were just asking something at the break about the venue and the scoring earlier. It's been a tough night shooting. Isaiah Stevens had a wide-open three, and he's such a good three-point shooter about 2 minutes ago, and he almost airballed it from the right wing, so.
Well, Isaiah Stevens, he can't put his legs into the shot. Right. Everything's short. But, I mean, everyone, the rim, it's just bouncing off the rims like crazy. I just wonder if earlier, I mean, they can't make layups.
Yep. Patrick Cartier, 6'8", below the rim guy. Got challenged, missed a layup. Joel Scott should have just freaking dug his head in and drawn a foul. All right, 8 minutes left, 7.5 minutes left, 7-point game. Gonzaga is just destroying McNeese. Gonzaga's got 44, and neither Texas or Colorado State has 40 yet with 7 minutes left. And like we told you, Oakland on fire from three. They lead at the half. Sorry, someone's Someone threw something at you. At the half, Kentucky trails by 38-35. Still got games coming up, so get on down here to the Westgate. We're in the theater. You can hang out in the sports book. Did you like anything tonight?
Yeah, I still kind of like Drake, but way too many people are on it. It's scaring me a little bit.
Drake is now -1 against Washington State. That's the late game. Tip for 7:05. Kansas holding steady at 7.5, but beat the hell against Samford.
Same with that one. I'm still hoping it goes to 7 or even 6.5 because I got the +9. I would just play that back.
Texas Tech 4.5 against NC State.
Yeah, which also came down significantly. I had +5.5. I think I'll probably look to play Texas Tech in game. All three of those teams I just mentioned are just Drake is way too popular. NC State way too popular for their run in the ACC. That was 5 games in 5 days. They could be completely worn out right now. That's a game where I would definitely look to play in game on Texas Tech at some point. If Texas Tech is up a couple points in the second half and NC State is struggling a little bit, I think it could turn into a real blowout. I first liked NC State when the line came out, but it's the kind of game where after 5 games in 5 days and only a couple days off, if they are behind and it's looking like they're not going to win, they could just get run off the floor in the last 5 or 6 minutes.
We should mention Iowa State's at the half. Got out to a really quick start against South Dakota State. It's now 7, 40-33.
I think South Dakota State went on like a 12 or 14 nothing run.
All right. So, DeMond, on the root or don't root list, can't root for Iowa State, Otts and Gilbert. Am I correct on that?
I am rooting for them, Steve.
Both?
Yeah, both.
Gilbert, Keyshawn.
I'm rooting for both because then we get the vindication.
Of what?
That he could have done that here if he would have stayed longer.
Yeah, they didn't. They ran him out of the program.
Bad luck with Otts.
Yeah,
you do know he was never staying here, right?
I don't know what you're talking about, Steve. If it wasn't his dream job, he would have stayed here. But we all know it was his dream job.
He was a part-timer.
You can't pass up your dream job. Come on. But
how many dream jobs does Chris Beard have?
He's a dreamer.
what do you think Otts would do? Are you serious on Louisville?
What?
The offer's that big?
Well, it was for Drew. Supposedly, it's not the same for the other coaches.
Okay. Well, you said $11 million a year?
It was reportedly nine. Nine is the one that I am most familiar with, at least the rumor. And then there were some people that said that he said no, so they came back and said, what if we do 11? And he still said no.
How does Louisville beat Michigan?
Again, you're trying to take a guy away from a very successful job in a major program.
And they have money.
Yeah.
Baylor has money to counter with. To beat out Louisville for Dusty May, what do you think Michigan's going to have to offer? Per.
10?
What? That seems high to me.
Whatever it takes.
If Louisville offered $6 or $7 million a year for Otzelberger, everything could change in this tournament. You know what happens. People are so freaking reactionary.
Of course.
If Iowa State makes a run and they get to the Final Four, he's the hottest name probably on the board.
No question.
He's getting a raise if he does that.
I ain't going to raise to 6 or 7 at Iowa State. I don't think.
Good.
I think they have money. I don't know if they have that much. Maybe.
We'll see. And, you know, these numbers, you never know what ends up being. And no call?
That's clearly a block.
Okay.
Right? They call the block.
That's wild. I guess they call it on the floor.
Joel Scott's moving. I mean, there might have been a player control issue there.
The shoulder down.
Sorry. Doing play-by-play on radio, but it looked like Joel Scott got rammed into and Texas rims out of 3. So 7-point game with 6 minutes left. Okay, the other one. Am I okay rooting for Texas Tech in the tournament?
For stealing Chris Beard?
No, I'll you're right. I should hate Texas Tech for that, but it's over.
What about Baylor with JTT?
Texas Tech in this game. So they've got Darian Williams, who, in spite of the fact that he was a member of the pack, I kind of like him. I like his game. And, Pop Isaacs is an intriguing guy.
Yeah, he's fun. Good hair.
Vegas guy?
Sure. Good hair, too.
All right.
Some more for you and DeMond to be jealous of, I guess.
Well, I don't know. DeMond, you're not jealous of Isaiah Stevens' hair.
Not at all.
You're insulted that I mentioned if you grow it out, you could do it.
Yeah, I don't like his haircut at all. So that's not a diss, Adam.
Oh, okay. Gonzaga, by the way, is 8 of 11 from 3. That's decent.
All I need to do – but real quick, you guys are talking about Texas Tech. They're playing NC State, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm rooting for NC State. DJ Burns. I want to see this guy go
he's
far.
He's the best. He's the best. Who doesn't? He's fun. That's a Steve Cofield.
I'm going to say that, you know what, in spite of what I said on the air yesterday about Lampkin, he kind of grew on me last night.
How would he not? That's your kind of guy.
It's you know what's weird about him? He's – like the other guys you mentioned who are big fellas generally have some legs. Lampkin has the skinniest legs for a 280-pound guy. Not that I am often looking at 280-pounders, but – he's got, like, some weird – I don't know. He's very top-heavy.
Like John Jones?
But he did – is John Jones under 280?
No, he's like 305.
I think John, God, he looked puffy the other day. And that stand-up with Aspinall.
He's a big fella.
How old is he? 36?
36, I believe.
He's getting, like – he's starting to get the kind of the blubber roll for the forehead. Like, it looked like his eyes and his cheek. You seen that, right? That's a big guy. That's what alarmed me. I'm like if it's all in your gut, it's one thing. But when your head starts getting fat?
Well, that's usually habits, I think. Lifestyle choices.
Okay. So he's code. So he's speaking in code.
He's got to.
Lampkin's listed at 300, over under.
Who is?
Lampkin, he's listed at 300.
Is he? Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
By the way, I looked at the BYU roster with their two big guys today. They were, like, listed at 220 and 230. I'm like, you don't have to lie. They're, like, 270-pound guys.
Yeah, well, what?
Traore is listed at, like, 230.
Isn't Burns listed at 280?
Where do we have Burns? Is Lampkin listed at 300? That's awesome. I think he's over.
On Basketball Reference, Burns listed 260. Come on.
Get out of here.
And what's the height at?
6'9".
You're right. I do love him.
Stop.
He is my kind of guy.
He's got to be.
He's 260.
I was going to say 6'7", 330. Maybe more.
You're taking off height. And adding weight.
Yeah, he's not as tall as they say, but he's definitely big.
I mean, no one really is.
No.
Lampkin's big, though. He's pretty tall. He's pushing 6'10 and a half, 6'11. Yeah, I was back in as soon as I started watching Lampkin. And then he gets – he's, like, just always screaming with the two arms. Like, on everything. Put back bunny.
He is the Daniel Vogelbach of NCAA basketball.
Another one of my favorites. You know, the sad thing with him is he's just so inconsistent that I cannot afford to have him on a fantasy team. And I love him.
He'll drag
those
you
are,
down.
Those are, well, that's my problem is over the years I've had teams with like six of those guys. It just does not work out.
Well, Joey Gallo, middle of the order in the NL.
I mean, what are we doing with him? We're both in the National League. You know he's going.
I know.
What are we doing?
Well, it's...
He broke my heart over the years. It's just rough.
I actually was listening to an online auction draft the other day. It was like he went for like a dollar, and people were like, he's in the middle of the order. He's going to play every day. He's going to put up counting numbers.
But what if it's 140?
Might be.
And that's the problem.
He's going to hit 140 with 38 home runs and 106 RBIs.
And somehow like a 314 OBP because he'll walk 110 times.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say he'll hit 38 home runs and 43 RBIs.
That's the problem with the RBI.
Yeah, that's the other.
Is always kind of low. When's your next mock draft for the NFL and obviously the Raiders with the focal point?
Well, I think it depends on how UNLV does in the NIT.
Okay. You may have more time or less time.
Sure.
You were pointing out I saw a grid of probably 25-plus mock drafts and the thought that they may take a quarterback or move up is starting to – Wayne.
Well, most people that do mocks don't have trades.
They do it straight up.
And there just won't be a guy that, you know, for the most part, almost everybody has foregone and nobody wants to put a fifth at that spot. The Raiders certainly have a need right now at corner. Everybody thinks they have a need at right tackle. I think they're okay with Theron Munford being the guy, but they probably still need depth anyway. So those are the two positions I think a lot of people are focused on in terms of where the Raiders would go right now if they had to make a draft pick and one of the quarterbacks aren't available. So I think the mocks right now have kind of coalesced around tackle and corner. And I know there's not a more perfect fit in terms of those positions in the Raiders than Terrion Arnold from Alabama. I mean, he's like a perfect Raider Antonio Pierce player. And so I would expect to see a lot more people kind of putting him with the Raiders, kind of pairing those up. And they're also, I believe it was that, I'm not sure if it was the combine or if his pro day, but some video started circulating on social media of just Pierce and Arnold just like loving each other. Like, they could not stop talking to each other. Love the bond was like immediate.
But I have a feeling we're going to have like six of those players.
Maybe, but Terrion Arnold fits. I mean, he has that style, that swag, that attitude. Like, he's an Antonio Pierce guy, and he's also incredible.
Is there any way that when you do your final mock draft, make a prediction now, that you'll land on an offensive lineman?
There's a chance, for sure. I mean, I think it's which player is the best available at that time. But I believe corner is a much bigger need right now than offensive tackle.
You believe that last year, too, right?
Yeah. They lost Illuminor.
You settled on a corner.
Yeah.
But then the draft did not go the way you thought it would.
Well, the problem was I loved Weatherspoon. I thought he was one of the best players I watched on tape last year anywhere. And most mocks had him going like 8 or 9 or 10 a little bit after the – or excuse me, like, you know, yeah, like around there. And then he ended up being gone by the time the Raiders were on the clock. So they weren't able to take him. And he obviously had a really, really good rookie year. But that was the guy. This year, I love Johnny Newton. I think he's one of the best players I've watched on tape by far. But the Raiders kind of alleviated that need by going with Christian Wilkins in free agency. So they don't really need a defensive tackle anymore. But it is funny, like, now that the Raiders don't need one, I started seeing some of the national guys like, man, have you watched this Johnny Newton film? Yeah. Yeah, I have. He's incredible. Going back to during the season last year, I asked Nate Hobbs about him because they played together in college. And I said, hey, like, I've been trying to watch some film on this kid. Like, has anybody ever successfully blocked him? And he was like, never a day in practice, never a day in a game. Wow. So, I mean, I think he saw some of the same things I did, and now other people are seeing it too. Like, he's awesome. Now, he project the measurables, maybe not, top 15 pick worthy, but the film is unbelievable on it. But they don't really need that position anymore, so I don't think that's where they're going to go. And I certainly, that's who I've had. I think that's who I had in my first two mock drafts. I don't think I'll have him in my next one.
364-1100, 364-1100. We got a big show coming up here in Vegas in September, MGM Grand Garden Arena. You get your tickets at AXS.com. Five Finger Death Punch with Marilyn Manson. Two tickets. DeMond's got your hookup. 364-1100. Caller 7.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
CSU. Looks like they're in trouble, Adam.
CSU. Is it a good one?
I mean, if DeMond Lassen, it might be a good one. He is just stone-faced right now.
No, I wish that I had a drum roll, like that rim shot.
A rim shot?
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Or is that a reminder that you bet Colorado State and it ain't going well?
That's what it was. Thank you.
Yeah.
Plus three.
Oh, Isaiah Stevens decides to make a three now. That's good.
They were plus 13 at the half. I looked at it.
Yeah.
I think they will now cover because I don't have it.
Well, they're not 11. They're going to start fouling, which Texas is going to make free throws.
You never know what happens in these situations.
No.
It could end up 17. It could end up 5.
Exactly. Your boy, while we were away, made another three.
Is that Jack Golkey?
Yes.
He's got 8 threes for Oakland?
Yeah.
And can I tell you, it's not like Kentucky's playing horrible defense. He is catching, like, with millimeters between him and a defender off picks.
Well, this last
handoffs, was this one open?
This last one they ran. I mean, well, they ran him off three screens, and then he had a like about, you know, a foot of separation, but it was still contested. But earlier, I mean, he was just struggling. But now they are covering him like at the midcourt stripe, okay, like denying him the ball. So
that one's 49-45. Oakland is beating Kentucky with 13 and a half left, and Colorado State gets another make. It's a 10-point game with a minute left. So maybe a miracle happens.
Aismith is like a 92% free throw shooter. He just missed one. Also, Iowa State lead down to 4.
Oh, boy. In the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Just wanted to get everyone caught up on some Mountain West Conference basketball news. I don't know if you saw it, but Nick Blake is back in the portal. Remember him?
Sure.
Had an outstanding looking freshman year and then kind of mysteriously faded out of the program and then landed at Pacific and wasn't very good this year. He was okay. He looked to have so much promise. Guy who played, you know, prep locally. So he's in the portal.
Like 400 kids now already?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen the update on the total number. Jeff Linder in Wyoming lost a promising big man, a 6'10 kid. Poor Tim Miles. But I don't blame the kids.
No.
Both Tibet Gorner and Alvaro Cardenas, the point guard and the 6'9 shooting wing, were pretty good players. They're both in the portal. God, that job is rough. Meanwhile, have you seen any updates on the Fresno job?
No.
Yesterday, someone was tweeting out a couple of names mentioned. Would you hire Ryan Miller, who was a former UNLV assistant?
Sure.
He's at Creighton.
9.
He
had
another 3.
I mean, that one was contested. that was wild.
I mean, these are the things that the tournament's made of.
I think 11 is the tournament record.
9 threes.
That was a tough one. That was a tough one. They were all over.
Maybe the Fresno job is a job that is heavily coveted.
I mean,
it does have potential.
They have some money. And there's, you know, there's not necessarily a ton of pressure right now because there's not much recent success.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, and they have some name recognition because of football, which does help. So, yeah, there's some positives to it.
I mean, you can't go lower. There is upside to get some crowds in there. I mean, either you have to be a real dreamer to walk into their arena. For people who haven't been to their arena.
Still the Save Mart?
It is incredibly gigantic.
Yeah.
It's a nice arena.
Yeah.
But to walk in and you're like, wait, what were you averaging? 1,400? There's 14,000 here for basketball?
Is that the house that Tark built?
Sort of. I don't know the history of that whole thing, why they moved. Because the teams often stay right near the other arena. Was it Selland?
Yeah.
And that always seemed kind of fine.
Well, they needed a big place to play.
They don't. That's the problem.
They did for a time.
they don't.
I am getting mad every time someone on Oakland shoots the ball.
Without giving it to three?
Yeah, beat the hot hand.
Yeah. What's this guy doing on the free throw line? Come on, Trey Townsend.
I could be wrong. Trey Townsend, I think, was Conference Player of the Year. So, like,
not tonight.
You know.
Not tonight. Give it up, man.
He's not America's star.
He just missed a free throw. Now, you're already down 2 points. Would have been a three by the kid who's hot as a pistol. All right, well, enjoy the games tonight. Great spot to watch is down here at the Westgate in the theater, which is pretty jam-packed right now, but the sports book is open. Plenty of space around the property to check it out. And, of course, all through the weekend. Thanks again to John Murray and Jay Cornegay for hosting us often and host a bunch of shows this week. Damon, very good job. Good setup here as well. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll see you.